that the question is very simple, is to ask if there is any correlation between the modes in this map. And as Richa was saying, so usually we plot only the two-point function of the power spectrum. Obviously, it's an obvious question to ask if this compression of the data is doable or justifiable, if there is any correlation in the sky. So I want to stress, let's keep the outline, but so the basic motivation why we think that there is a very small non-Gaussianity in the map is that the standard inflationary scenario based on a scalar field which is low rolling is based on a field which is extremely weakly coupled. To have an inflationary phase, you need all the slow roll parameters, which are basically the derivative of the potential, to be sufficiently small in Planck units, in such a way that the rolling of a scalar is sufficiently slow, and you have an approximately the Sitter space. So this implies that this scalar is extremely weakly coupled, which tells you that the interaction between the modes of the scalar are extremely weak. And there is you can do an explicit calculation, but it turns out that the dimensionless quantity telling you what is the typical non-Gaussianity of a map should be of order of this the parametric dependence, and it should be much smaller than 10 to minus 5. Okay, and this is completely model independent in the sense it doesn't depend, for example, on the third derivative of the potential, because the leading interaction between the modes come from gravity, and it's tremendously small. So it is probably unobservable even in the future, for sure not now, because to see this deviation from Gaussianity, you need something like 10 to the 10 data, 10 to the 12 maybe, and we are really far from it, because WMAP has only, quote unquote, like a couple of millions of data. So if you want, you have to look at this prediction as something saying that any detection of non-Gaussianity should be interpreted as a detection of, if you want, of new physics, or at least some deviation from the standard slow roll scenario. And I will go through two kind of modification which can enhance the non-Gaussian contribution, which are basically a modification of the inflaton Lagrangian through basically higher derivative terms, or the presence during inflation of an additional light field, which is at least partially or completely responsible for a production of density perturbations. So these are the two main, I would say, theoretically justified, theoretically motivated sources of non-Gaussianity. And I will stress that given that if we imagine to observe non-Gaussianity, it would be very, very important because it's not a number. So obviously, a three-point function depends on the momenta, k1, k2, and k3. And if we impose a scale invariance and translational invariance, we are still left with a function, which is potentially very, very interesting because it contains information from the physics creating the correlation between the modes. Okay, so let me go through, before doing really going through the analysis of the real data, let's look at some broad, some indication of the models in which these non-Gaussianities are big. So a very simple example you can do is to take a single field model with the usual slow roll potential and add the higher dimensional operators, for example, compatible with the shift symmetry in such a way that you don't have problems of spoiling slow roll. For example, the leading operator is of this form. And you can ask, okay, but what happens if I add this operator? Do I see some big non-Gaussianity or not? Well, you can do the explicit calculation. These evaluate on the background, so you have a correlation between the modes. And you can have an explicit function, which is quite complicated. But the bottom line is that the typical dimensional ratio telling you what is the level of non-Gaussianity is given by this expression. And basically, obviously, everything depends on the size of this operator. But if you take lambda, which is the scale of, if you want, of new physics, to be not too small, not to interfere, for example, with the classical motion of the inflaton, phi dot is the classical motion of the inflaton, you are constrained that this ratio is not that big and probably unobservable. So it's quite difficult to pump up this operator in such a way to see long Gaussian entities. Well, this is not even really true. And in fact, there are much more interesting examples, for example, based on this Lagrangian, which is called DBI inflation. Basically, the idea is that in some model, higher derivative terms are very, very relevant and are crucial for the dynamic of the inflaton. This is justified in this, if you want, is a DBI action in an ADS throat. So it's a well-justified Lagrangian. And in this case, the same effect, but with much higher, I mean, these operators are much less suppressed, gives a big non-Gaussianity. Okay, this is the one of the possibility. Another even more, yes. No, 10 to minus 5, which one? So I'm going to through the analysis of the data. 10 to, so standard slow roll inflation predicts something which is suppressed with respect to 10 to minus 5. It's like epsilon 10 to minus 5. So it's like 10 to minus 6 or smaller. So this is the typical dimensional ratio telling you how much Gaussian is the signal is, in the sense that you need like 10 to the 12 data to see something. In these models, the non-Gaussianity can be much bigger. Another example, I will not go through. I'm going to it, but like 10 to minus 3 or so. Sorry, I will go through the data. So another possibility, which is I'm not going through, but it's ghost inflation. So it's another example in which higher derivative terms are crucial for the dynamics. In this case, the model does not make much sense without this higher derivative correction. And this is another model in which non-Gaussianities are big. And so, for example, the level is of order 10 to minus 3, which is close to the experimental bound. Okay, this is one class of models in which higher order terms in the Lagrangian are relevant. Another possibility is to have another field in the game, to have an additional light scalar which is fluctuating during inflation and gives you density perturbation. So this, for example, is the typical, for example, the Couverton scenario or this variable decay width scenario. These are quite similar, at least from the point of view I need them. So let's go, for example, through this example of variable decay scenario. In this scenario, you have an additional field, which I called sigma. This field is light, so it has fluctuations during inflation. And these fluctuations become density perturbation, adiabatic density perturbation, because this scalar changes the decay width of the inflaton. It can happen in many, many ways. It doesn't really matter. It can change the mass of the inflaton, the coupling constant, the phase space, and so on. But anyway, it's quite conceivable that gamma depends on sigma. So you can calculate what happens in this case. If you want, you have a parallel universe interpretation. So if you want, you have to imagine that you reach reheating, but in different parts of the universe, you have a different sigma. And this different sigma will give a different reheating efficiency. And so if you want, the final metric, this radiation dominance metric, will depend on the value of this gamma, which depends on x. Okay, so you can do the explicit calculation. The bottom line is that in all these models, like variable decay width or Couverton, there are additional sources of non-Gaussianities, basically coming from the relation between the scalar sigma and, in this example, the decay width, and finally the density perturbation variable. And in all these steps, when you do the calculation, you are higher order terms, which are nonlinear, and therefore gives you non-Gaussianities. It's quite model dependent, the answer, but I would say that it's quite robust that you get non-Gaussianities which are much bigger than 10 to minus 5. And that obviously we have constraints from data on these kind of models. Okay. So I talked about two different classes of models, and I want to stress that these two classes of models predict a quite different three-point function. And so the three-point function it can be written in this form, factorizing out a delta function for transitional invariance. And this function can be basically, in these two models, has quite different shapes and quite similar in the two classes. So one is called, I can call it local distribution. What does it mean? It means that the variable we observe, this zeta, which will be related to the temperature fluctuation, is not a Gaussian variable, it's not zeta g, which is Gaussian, but it has a contribution coming from the square of a variable at the same point, x, x, the same point. So it's something which is local in real space, and it gives this function for f. Okay, if you want, is local in real space. And this is typical for any model with a second field, because all the processes giving rise to non-Gaussianities are basically local in real space. So for example, the k width is a function of sigma, but everything happens, so the relation between the variable we measure and the quantity, which are fluctuations, are local in real space. So I always end up with a form, a function of this form, with this parameter, which is an overall variable, which will depend on the model, obviously, with the two-point function. Okay, this is typical for all the models with a second field. On the other hand, the models with higher derivative interactions, basically, they give a different different function. The function can be quite complicated, so the explicit form is not very illuminating. But the point is that, as you can expect, derivative interaction will give you interactions between modes with comparable wavelength. So the modes go out of the horizon, and these interactions, which are suppressed by derivatives, will contribute only when they cross the horizon, and then they will decay when the derivatives, when the mode becomes of very long wavelength. And this is the typical, which is a physical distinction between the two cases. So I want to show you, for example, what is the signal to noise you can expect in these models. Okay, so these plots are it's a comparison between the two shapes. What I'm plotting is in some sense the signal to noise. So it's something. So it's the function f, but it's normalized with a two-point function in such a way to give me some dimensionless measure of a non-Gaussianity. And as a function of the ratio between k3 and k1 and k2 and k1 in both cases, so it's a function, it's set to zero outside this triangle. This is the physical triangle here and here. And so it gives me where, if you want, the non-Gaussianity is localized in Fourier space. For example, this point is the equilateral configuration, so it's a correlation between modes all of the same wavelength. While this corner, which is very amplified here, is much bigger here, is the corner in which one of the k go to zero. So we have a squeeze configuration in momentum space. And as I was mentioning before, the idea is the following: that in all higher derivative models, this function is peaked over equilateral configuration, because the model predicts a correlation between modes of comparable wavelength, and then decays when one of the modes becomes much different than the others. While on the other end, this is the prediction for the local shape, which, as I told you, is the prediction for any model with a second field. In this case, it's peaked over very squeezed configuration, and this is a consequence of the fact that everything is local in real space. So when you go to Fourier space, you get something, a correlation between modes of very different wavelengths. And so what is the conclusion we can draw from this is that, first of all, in principle, once we hopefully observe something, we observe some deviation from Gaussianity, these two models, these two classes of models could be distinguished, which is good. And on the other end, it indicates the fact that if you want to get limits on these two classes of models, you should do a dedicated analysis in both cases, because they are quite different in shape. So so that's why we thought it was interesting to study double map data and to look for deviations from pure Gaussian statistics. In both cases, both in the local case and in the, if you want, equilateral case. So the double map collaborations already did the analysis after the release of the first year data with the local case. Okay, so the first so we extended, if you want, the analysis to the second case, because we thought it was rather different and interesting. So let me go through, I don't want to bother too much with the details. But the good point is WMAP more or less contains all the information about non-Gaussianities we have, because it has a lot of data, and the physics is quite simple, and basically the constraints coming from WMAP are much better than for example, Argus structure or our experiments. So it's good. If you look at the map I showed at the beginning, it's fine. So the analysis is not completely straightforward. So it's not completely, it means that it's not easy. So basically, you have an estimator for, so you want to constrain the level of, so I showed you the two functions. I want to constrain the level of the function, so the overall amplitude, if you want. So basically, you have an estimator, which is a trilinear function of the multiples, okay, with a certain coefficient, which depends on the model, on the average in your model, but it's a trilinear operator. You can expand this expression, including the transfer function, including the CMB physics. So the bad point is that so the number of data is very large, it's like a million or so, and this is this would require something like 10 to the 16 operations, which is really too much for an analysis. So it's really impossible to do something like this. The first point is that you have to choose a function which is not completely generic, otherwise the analysis is impossible, but you have to use a function which is factorizable, which means that it's the sum of products of function of K1 and K2 separately. The reason is that, as you can see, if the function is factorizable, you can do this integral before, and the time to do the calculation scales to 10 to the 9, which is doable, okay? So this, for example, is true for the function of local models, but it's not true for the other models in general. So what we did is we used, if you want, a function we invented, which has the same properties, very, very close, it's practically indistinguishable from the real ones, but it is factorizable so that the analysis is doable. So this is the first trick you have to use. Then obviously there are all the usual problems with analysis of the data, because the CMB signal is diagonal in Fourier space, but all the crap is diagonal in real space, so the galaxy is in real space, the noise is in real space. And so this complicates a bit the analysis, so obviously you have a non-diagonal error matrix, because so you have two bases which fight one against the other. So an interesting point is that it turns out that given this complication, the real estimator for what we are looking for is not a trilinear estimator containing a product of A's, but it contains also a linear piece. Okay, I don't want to enter too much into details. So the reason is that at the end, so the addition of this linear piece in the estimator corrects from a contamination coming from the fact that WMAP observes the region of the sky in a different way. So for example, these two blobs are regions which are very, very well observed in the sense that the number of times you look at the same point is high. And this introduces, so this, if you want, looks like something which is non-Gaussian, because in some region of the sky, the noise is smaller and not in the others. And this contaminates, if you want, your estimator, while with the addition of this linear piece is better. Okay. Okay, now we can just go through the calculation after these few remarks. We have to thank the WMAP collaboration. So we talked a lot with Komatsu. We did the first analysis because we tried to be as close as possible to their analysis in such a way that we had cross-check. What do you do basically? So you fix the cosmological parameters to the best fit value. You start producing Monte Carlos, Gaussian Monte Carlos. You smooth with all the bands, the different frequency band of your experiment. You add the independent noise realization to each map. You combine the maps and you put the mask for the galaxy in your Monte Carlo. You calculate the estimator I was showing before. This is not an easy task. So it takes many Fourier transform back and forth in between real and Fourier space. And you can calculate both for the local shape and for the equilateral shape. Okay, so it takes 100 minutes for every Monte Carlo, so it's quite heavy. And at the end, you do the same procedure on the real data to check if everything is compatible with Gaussianity. So these are the results. These, if you want, is the standard deviation of the estimator as a function of L max, the multiple. So this, if you want, is the theoretical bound for the local shape and for the equilateral shape. And so these are our results. And these two different points are with and without this linear correction to the estimator. This is short just because the DoubleNet collaboration used this upper curve, if you want, because it didn't, they didn't use this additional piece in the estimator, which is quite, I mean, it's relevant. In the future, it will be even more relevant. But anyway, and we are quite close to the theoretical limit, so the analysis is quite close to what we can do from the data. it's still not optimal. There are still things that you can improve something, but you know the room for improvement is not big. So this is the result for the variance of the estimator. Now we put in the real data, and unfortunately there is no detection. So this means that WMAP data are compatible with the Gaussianity, which I stress it again, it's completely a non-trivial statement because we are talking about a couple of millions of pixels, and this, there is no sign of deviation from the Gaussian signal, which is very good. So we put limits on these two parameters. This is on the local shape. It's a bit better of, with respect to the WMAP analysis, like 30% better. And the improvement comes from this estimator, which is has a smaller variance. And I think it will be relevant, this addition, especially in the future. This is the limit on the overall amplitude of the other classes of models I was talking about. I mean, the difference between these numbers is not very relevant. It depends on how you choose to normalize the two functions. So it's not very relevant. Okay, and these are the results. Obviously, it's difficult to say what they imply because, in the sense that all the models usually have three parameters. So it's true that we are getting down to an interesting range for any models, but it's difficult to say. So obviously you have constraints on the parameters of the models, but it's still difficult to say that you have ruled them out and so on. But so proper improvement will be very relevant. So just one thing. So all these numbers should be thought about multiplied by 10 to minus 5, because this is the usual way to normalize the non-Gaussianity. But this means something like 110 times 10 to minus 5. So this is a very strong limit. It means that the dimensionless non-Gaussianity is constrained to be something like 10 to minus 3, so which is the correct number you expect. Okay, so it is. Okay, so let me flash the conclusion as I have no time. So as I told you, so the non-Gaussianity should be considered as a probe of something which is strange. As the speaker before was saying, it's interesting to look for something which is theoretically motivated, in the sense that it's difficult to judge what is the significance of something which is not a priori justified. So I talked about two classes of models in which non-Gaussianities are big, based on non-minimal Lagrangians of the inverton or additional light field for the inverton. We saw that there is a distinction in the shape of a three-point function in these two models. So we did the analysis for these two cases with some improvement. So we didn't see anything, unfortunately, but these are the limits that we have right now. The future, so with WMAP, we'll have an improvement like 60% or something on these numbers coming from the new data. With Planck, there is a factor of 4 or even like factor of 8 maybe with the polarization. So there is still room for improvement. And what I find interesting is that we'll get to a point in which we'll get to a very interesting point when with Planck running, because at a certain point FNL will get down to something of order 1 or of order a few. In that regime, the situation becomes very complicated because at that point, you have to control all the nonlinear effect coming from second order evolution of the fluid, so all possible second order effects contaminating your map, which are not under control. So we reached a point in which we can, in which these models are, so this model predicts something which is bigger than what we should observe in the future. When we reach something of order one, then the situation will be complicated because we cannot control the standard physics. Everything becomes nonlinear and very, very difficult. But at least I think that unless you want really to fine-tune parameters, all these non-minimal models will be ruled out by observation in the future with Planck also. Thank you.
Okay, any questions? Where's the microphone, by the way? Oh, there. Thanks.
So I expect foregrounds like point sources, Sanayi-Zeldovich effect, and things like that to obviously be non-Gaussian. Somehow, from the shape of the triangles, one should be able to separate these effects. Okay. So how much do you think, to what level do you think one can do that? I mean, we are trying to get to FNL of 1. So you're trying to push to larger and larger L's, but then you have all this extra effect that come in. And
I think that
where does one stops winning, basically?
I think that until the level of Planck, it should be doable in the sense that, as you said, that there is a clear distinction in the shape. For example, so we are predicting something which is completely independent of the scale, so it should be at any scale, while all foregrounds are localized